Hello, everyone. Are you having fun yet? Fantastic. I really want to spend some time getting to know you, so if you could just tell me your names and where you're from, just everyone all at once. Go ahead. So nice to meet you, Georgia from Minnesota. That's so lovely. Fantastic. I am so glad you're here to talk about atheism and to ask some hard questions. And to begin, I want to tell you a couple of stories from when I was in high school and atheism came crashing into my life. The first time was when I was at a beach house with my friends surfing and basically getting up to no good in Pismo Beach, California. And we were hanging. Are you all from Pismo Beach? Oh, fantastic. Oh, great. So you get this. So I'm hanging out in this beach house. We're having a great time. We're going surfing during the day. We're eating clam chowder. We're having all types of fun. And then in the evenings, as it goes, you start talking about the deep questions of life. And my buddy Mario looks at me and he says, Ken, you're a Christian, right? I said, yeah, Lutheran, born and bred, baptized all the way through. I said, Mario, you're Catholic, right? And he says, yeah, I was raised Catholic, but I'm an atheist now. And all of my friends kind of looked and they're like, ooh, it's about to go down. And sure enough, Mario started grilling me with all types of tough questions. Asking me things about, you believe that God is all-powerful, right? And I said, yeah, of course, omnipotent. I learned that in confirmation, check it off the list. And then he said, you believe that God is all-loving, right? And I said, of course. He said, you believe that God is good, right? Of course. He wants the best for the people that he has created, correct? And I said, exactly. And then he says, then why would he make a world full of suffering and conflict and hate? Why are there starving people? Why are they people that die horrible deaths while we live in comfort? That was just the first question. After that, I did my best to spar. I had some apologetics. I went to a couple sessions at a National Youth Gathering in 1998. I thought I had it. But at the end of the conversation, I was left with more questions than answers. And I started to wonder, what if Mario is right? What if there is no God? During high school, I was also best friends with a guy named Greg. Greg was a pastor's kid. Any PKs out there? Woo! Fantastic. My buddy Greg was a pastor's kid, and his dad was a pastor at a Pentecostal church, and they lived right next to the church. And I was best friends with Greg. I mean, I was part of the family. I would walk from my house over to Greg's house, pick him up in the morning, and then we'd walk across the street down two blocks to go to school. Usually there'd be some coffee and some conversation with his dad, his mom, his sisters. I was regularly at his church for youth group. We were thick as thieves, and I loved him and his family. And one day, when I went over to his house to pick him up and go to school, it was weird. Greg answered the door, and I said, hey, Greg, how's it going? We coming in for coffee? We going straight to school? What do you want to do? And he says, just go to school, man. I'm done with this place. And I was like, okay, what's going on? We walk across the street. We get that far. We sit on a little embankment across the street looking at his house here and the church there. And I'm like, what's going on, Greg? And he said, my parents are getting divorced. I said, no. And he's like, yeah, and it's worse than that, man. My dad's being removed as pastor of the church. And we're being asked to move out of the house. And we're told never to come to church again, because our family is falling apart and we're not being good examples for Jesus Christ and his church. I was wrecked from my friend Greg. I couldn't believe it. He lost his family, his church, his entire life in a matter of a day, as far as he was concerned. And I was sitting there and I was thinking, how can I comfort my buddy Greg? How can we figure this out together? And I asked him, what do you think? What do we do? Where do we go from here? And he says, I don't know, man. Things are going to get awful. But I can tell you one thing. I am never going to set foot in a church again. And I sat there and I said, you know, good idea. Neither am I. And you know what? I'm going to go one step further. I'm also never, ever going to believe in God again. Now, obviously, there's more to that story because here I am in National Youth Gathering, right? My baptism held. I rejoined the church. I went to National Youth Gathering again, decided to become a director of Christian education, and later a pastor. But Greg's story was very different, is very different. Greg is still an avowed atheist. And that wound from what happened to him at his church has stayed with him, his father, and his entire family. None of them, no longer part of the church. Whew, man, if you thought this was going to be a comedy session, you came to the wrong place, am I right? Like, that was, wow, he started with that. Like, where do we go from there, right? Today, we're going to talk about wounds, and we're going to talk about wonder, and we're going to talk about why people become atheists, why people opt to not believe. And I don't know where you are at. I don't know what stories you have. I don't know what questions you've asked. I don't know why you're in the room today. Maybe it's because you have someone in your family who has asked you the hard questions, who has been the Mario in your life. Or maybe you have suffered through some stuff and you're wondering about church and about religion and about the God of the cosmos and whether he's really there or not. And we're going to get at those different questions. But I hope at the end of this, what we're going to be able to figure out is how to better love people who don't believe and who aren't part of our church, and then also deal with some of the difficult questions that we have about God and life and death and the very nature of all things. But first, let's start with some definitions about what atheism is. According to an organization called the American Atheist, they say this, and they're very clear. Atheism is one thing only. It's a lack of belief in gods. Atheism is not an alternative belief. It's not just something that is a different type of understanding of the universe, nor does it answer any other question about what a person believes, should believe, could believe. It's simply a rejection to the assertion that there are gods. This is important to them, that it is non-belief. It is not a different belief. It is not a different worldview. It's simply saying to the idea of gods, no. But of course, there's a lot of diversity in terms of what non-belief is and what non-belief looks like. There's also a lot of questions about when atheism began. People talk about whether or not atheists have always existed or if they're a relatively modern phenomena, and the answer to that question is yes. The ancient Greeks had forms of atheism. But a lot of the atheism that you encounter today started in and around the 17th and 18th century, along with this movement called modernism. And so there's some people out there who say what we know as atheism is actually not the rejection of God or the idea of deities in general, but the rejection of a very modern God, and the rejection of the modern God that we in our churches have helped create. And it's probably a little bit of both. People have been questioning the existence of God for as long as people have been believing in God. They've also been asking really hard questions over the recent centuries. And we're seeing the results of that. I'm sure you see the results of that in your daily life, at your school, in your church, in your family. The odds are you know someone who is atheist. Maybe you're an atheist, and yet you're here. That's because the numbers of atheists are on the rise across the world. If you look at the numbers, you can see that roughly a quarter and up to 34% of Generation Z, that's most of you, do not adhere to any particular religion at all. They're known as nuns, and not the ones with habits or who are Catholic, right? 1 billion people worldwide do not follow a religion. And then in certain places like the UK and in Norway, 60% of the population in the United Kingdom never go to church. And then more people in Norway count themselves as atheists than there are believers. At the same time, 83% of the world is still religious. So how do we make sense of that? That 1 out of every 5 people in the world don't believe or don't count themselves as part of religion, and yet religion seems to be very pervasive and persistent, and it's not going away. So the question is, how do we get along with each other? What kind of questions do we explore together? What kind of conversations do we have? Now, like I said, there's a lot of different types of non-belief that are out here. And this is a way too simple typology or breakdown of the different types of atheism there is. One is, as the American atheists define it, non-belief. They're determined by what they don't believe. These are just the things that I don't think are true. And that's it. Pretty simple. And that would be your classic atheist. Atheist, of course, being a Greek combo word of a, meaning without, and theos, meaning God, without God, or without the belief in God. Then there's another form of atheism that's out there. And this is more the I'm not part of a religion atheism. So they don't go too deep into actually what they believe or what they don't believe in, but they especially don't want to say they're part of a religious body. They don't want to say they're Lutheran, they don't want to say they're Catholic, they don't want to say they're Hindu, they don't want to say they're Buddhist. They don't want to say anything in particular at all. They just say, I'm not part of that. And you might hear them labeled as the nuns or the spiritual but not religious. Then there's agnosticism. And this is a different form of non-belief that is kind of like, which is, you know, somewhat of a respectable perspective on a lot of different questions in the world. I mean, there's tons of stuff you don't know about, right? I mean, I was trying to get my computer connected here, and it wasn't getting along with the HDMI cable, and pretty soon I was like, man, maybe I'm not going to have a PowerPoint. What are we going to do then? And I was like, I don't know. We'll figure it out. But agnosticism is saying without, and gnosis, knowledge, without knowledge. I'm just not sure. And then I also say there's a fourth kind of atheism that's out there, and one that I'm seeing more and more prevalent as I work with people who are in university systems, and that is app atheism. App atheism basically being, they don't care. They're just not concerned with the ultimate questions of life. There are far more important things for most people to be dealing with. I mean, there are world crises going on. If you heard about this pandemic thing that happened, or a war in Ukraine, or these prices are going up, or I got to pay for college, or this has got to happen, or my family's falling apart. Do I have time to talk about questions in terms of who created the world, if there's a creator? I don't know, man. It seems like a lot of work. And so I like to think of it being non-belief, the non-religious, the agnostic, and the ap-atheist. Four different types of non-belief. The people who are just largely unconcerned with issues of belief, spiritual practice, or traditional religious belonging. Half of you as adults actually don't have spiritual conversations. Have you ever heard the old cliche that there's two topics you don't talk about at the dinner table? Right? Religion and politics. Yeah. It's very awkward for me because I'm a religious studies professor and a pastor and a religion journalist. And so people are like, Ken, what do you do? And I'm like, well, we're not supposed to talk about it. I do, and I usually ruin dinner because of it. But yeah, most people don't even have spiritual conversations. I mean, can you remember the last time you had a spiritual conversation with someone outside of church? I mean, that would feel weird, right? I mean, first, talking to someone is strange. Like, I totally feel that, okay? Like, this is much more comfortable to me. Talking to all of you out there, very, very cool. You get me on the side, I'm like, yeah, I don't know what to do here. This is weird, okay? But yeah, most people just don't want to talk about religion. They just don't care to, or they're afraid of bringing it up. They're afraid of a Mario Ken debate situation emerging, okay? And then, yeah, most people don't learn about religion or religions or things that are deemed religious. Again, because they want to avoid it, they're afraid of conflict, or, again, they just don't care. But we're called to have spiritual conversations. We're called to engage with people who say they don't believe, who say they're not religious, who say they're agnostic, or those who just don't care. But the first thing we need to see from this little bit of history and these little bit of numbers and this, like, very basic typology of non-belief is that the nuns, or the people who do not believe or who are not religious, are not all the same. It's important to understand their story, their perspective, where they come from, what questions they've had, what experiences they've gone through. And that's what I want to focus on a little bit more as we continue forward today. Now, again, one of the first things that atheists will tell you, and they're very, very firm about this, is that they're not religious in any sense of the term, hence why they identify as non-religious. But there's way more to it than that. Like I said, I've had the honor and the opportunity to connect with a lot of people who don't believe. From my friends Mario and Greg and many others in high school to various others along the way. I get a lot of atheists coming into my classroom, especially now that I teach in Germany. I would say probably 50 to 75% of my students don't believe or are not religious in some way, shape, or form. The vast majority of them probably are app atheists. They just don't care. And yet they take my class. They sign up for something like Introduction to Islam or Global Christianity or the History of Christian-Muslim Relations. And I'm like, why are you here? And a lot of them have an interest, or they say, well, these are the big questions of our age. Religious conflict will define a lot of things. Lots has changed in Europe. Lots has changed in the United States. There are things that we should know about, even if we don't care or even if we don't identify as religious. And then I've also got lots of friends who don't believe. My wife and I, we have two best friends who live in Sweden. Absolute best friends. We just celebrated their wedding. It was fantastic. They're avowed atheists. They're our best friends. And every time we get together, we talk about it. They were talking to me about what I was going to be talking about here at the National Youth Gathering. They helped put together this presentation. And they want you to know, they don't believe in anything, and that's okay. Check it off my list. But how can we get to know people like that? What are the stories that have led to where they are? What makes them tick? Why is it that my best friends want you to know they don't believe, and that's okay? Leave them alone. Well, let's talk about some of their stories. Non-belief and lack of religious identification come from somewhere. And I have a basic, again, way too basic division that it comes from either a wound or a sense of wonder. Like I shared with my story earlier, there are deep questions that I had, troubles that I had with the belief that I was raised in. And that led me to start questioning things when I was in high school. And then there was the wound of watching my friend Greg and his family fall apart because of a perspective that a church took and a set of actions that the church then decided to see through that blew up their life and impacted me personally as well. And so that's why I left the church for several years, vowing never to return. And then I didn't keep my atheist promises. So how do we unpack, how do we get at the stories of wound and wonder in the lives of people who are atheists around us? Well, the first thing is to ask them, to have a conversation. Like I said, a lot of my friends are atheists or are agnostic or are not religious. And I think of multiple people when I imagine the individuals that I've been able to get to know over the years. And one of them would be my friend Jen. So this is a different friend now. Jen and I met because we were living in the same apartment complex in the Phoenix, Arizona area. And I was walking my dog around the lake. She and her partner were walking their dog around the lake. And our dogs got along. They started sniffing each other. So did the humans. And then we started a conversation, okay? And we became really, really good friends. We connected over things like Mystery Science Theater 3000. Anybody know what that is anymore? Yeah, okay, there's a few of you out there. Nerds unite, okay? But Mystery Science Theater 3000, several other things, we were having good conversations about lots of stuff. And then it came to that point in time where they said, hey, Ken, what do you do? And I said, well, I'm a pastor. And they said, oh. And I was like, oh. I said, well, how do you feel about that? And they're like, not great. You seemed like a cool guy. And I was like, well, could we go back in time and could you imagine that's the same guy? And they're like, I don't know. We'll see. The good news is we're still friends to this day. And as part of the ongoing conversations that we had and then the multiple atheist and Christian debates that we went to at Arizona State University and all the different philosophical conversations that we had, books that we read together, and all the debates that we had over our dinner conversations as well, we came to know a little bit more about Jen's story. And Jen's story is that she was raised in a Jewish household, but she was sent to a Christian school as a kid because her parents said, we want her to have a quality education, and this Lutheran school in our neighborhood is the best one that offers it. And as she was at the Lutheran school was prepping for Christmas time, and of course they were going to put on the Christmas pageant. And they liked Jen so much, she was such a smart, precocious, and interested and engaged young woman, that they said, Jen, you're Jewish, you're super involved, you should be married. Perfect. Perfect, right? She was made for the role, you might say. And so she was put in as Mary, and she was a kid, and she knew nothing what was going on. But they were doing the play, and, you know, how many of you have ever been in, like, a Christmas pageant, right? Okay? It's a strange thing. It's a weird thing. It's a nerve-wracking thing, okay, to get up in front of people and to play something out, especially when you're a little kid and you've got, like, all these people looking at you, taking pictures, et cetera, et cetera. And Jen was freaked out. And she was starting to get nervous, and she wanted to leave. But of course, if you've ever been an adult directing one of these plays, the last thing you want is for the kids to like dissipate, run away, start crying in the middle of the stage, right? And so the director said to her, stay in place, don't leave, don't run to your mom. And so Jen started crying, she started weeping during the production, and no one was listening to her, no one was letting her go. And so she decided that there was only one way out of this situation. And she reached over to the doll that was baby Jesus. She grabbed him by his little baby Jesus feet. And then she took him and threw him as far as she could down the center aisle of that Lutheran church. And if the story is to believe, she got some serious air on that Jesus, okay? No crying he made. But then he made a sound when he hit the ground. And everyone heard it. Because she had just threw baby Jesus in the air. No one was saying anything anymore. The play was over. Jen and her parents were mortified. But again, it was a story of a church that didn't deal with it well. They removed Jen from the play. She didn't get to do the second production on the second night. And it was a wound that stayed with her for the rest of her life. And she said, yeah, churches are not fun places. Christians are horrible people, and the only worth of Jesus is being able to chuck him as far away from me as I can. That's one set of stories. The wounds that people carry, the stories that they have, that if we ask, we build relationships, we might be able to get at. Then there's another side. I usually find that people do have some type of wound with the church. They have some type of experience that did not go well. And that was true with my friends Donald and Megan as well. Now, Donald and Megan and I became really good friends when I lived here in Houston, Texas. Donald is the leader of a national black atheist organization. And he always says that black people in the United States and across the world have been enslaved by Christianity long enough, and that he is working to liberate them from the church. And so naturally, I was intrigued by his story. And when I was writing for the Houston Chronicle here in the city, I interviewed Donald about his organization for black atheists in the United States and around the world. And then I got to know Megan, because Megan was a homeschool teacher for her family and a group of others. But she was not, as you might expect, because it's pretty common, a Christian homeschool teacher. She was an atheist homeschool teacher. And they had a school where they were raised with very strong atheist values and principles. And I did a story about her atheist homeschooling community for the Houston Chronicle. And I was working at a church called Cross Point Community Church out in Katy, Texas. And when I was there, I decided, wouldn't it be fun to invite Donald and Megan to the church and have an interview with an atheist? Just do an event. This is an old movie now, but Interview with a Vampire. Anybody know that? Okay, so I was working on those vibes. I was like, atheists are scary, they're blood-sucking demons from another dimension, let's just run with that. And so we called it Interview with an Atheist. That the media tech team did a great job of making it super horror filmy, okay? And Donald and Megan, they were totally game. They were like, we love how you're building this up, Ken. And then they came to the church, we put them up on stage, gave them mics, and I said, Donald, Megan, you open up, you share your stories, that's where we're gonna begin. So they went up there, and they shared their stories about why they left the church, why they weren't part of it, why we had an atheist homeschool, why I started a black atheist organization working to liberate my fellow black people from the hold of Christianity that has been forced on them by colonization and slavery and all these other things. And man, again, it was like that moment when Jen threw baby Jesus through the church, okay? Everyone who was sitting there in about a room this size with this many people was just like, why is Ken letting them do this? They are trash-talking us left, right, and center. And they came thinking it was going to be a kind of debate. And then they sat down, they were done with their stories, and then I got to have my response. The first thing I did is I stepped up, walked to the podium, and I said, "Thank you, Donald. Thank you, Megan, for sharing your stories. I love you guys both so much, because we've become really good friends over the years." And then I told everyone at that church where I was the teaching pastor, I said, "I love atheists sometimes more than my fellow Christians." And I know that offended people in the crowd then. Maybe that offends you a little bit now. Why would a pastor say he loves atheists more than his fellow Christians? Well, the reason then, and the reason now that I still sometimes feel that way, is because my friends Donald and Megan and Jen and Greg and Mario, they ask tough questions. They explore some of the deepest questions that the world offers about how this very world, this very cosmos, hangs together. Is there meaning in molecules? Is there purpose in the way that the planets spin? Is God good? Is his church good? Do they love the world as they say God does? They sharpen me. They force me to wonder things that in the comfort of my Christian community and my congregations, I'm usually not asked. And so I'm very thankful for their wonder. And their story is that they, again, had wounds, but they also asked hard questions to push back on why is it that black Christians have had the experiences that they've had. Is it because of colonization and slavery? What's the story there? Is homeschooling a predominantly Christian thing? Is that good, bad, in between? Are our schools too Christian? Because that's why Megan took her kids out of school and decided to do an atheist homeschool. She said the public school was far too inculcated or full of Christian theology and prayer, etc., etc. All of these stories show us that every non-believer has a trajectory, has experiences, has questions, and we're invited to get to know them, to ask the questions, to explore the wounds and wonder with them. Now, if it seems like I've been too friendly to atheists, this is now where I'm going to turn a little bit to start to question who they are, what they don't believe, and why they don't believe it, and how they're often much more religious than they let on. So, the second point I want you to get today is not only that people have wounds and they have wonder and that's part of their story and we want to get to know them, but also that atheists, for all their talk about not believing in things, not being religious, often believe a lot of stuff and often are very, very religious. It's something that I call and others call in religious studies religion beyond religion. The ways in which people who would say they're not religious actually act and think and confess in very religious ways. Now, when atheists leave religion or when they didn't have religion, if they grew up that way, they would count themselves as secular, right? And what's the opposite of secular? Religious, right? What's the opposite of religious? Secular. What would you define secularism as? Not religious, right? These are two words that are so often paired together that we just accept that they mean these things. Secular means not religious. Religious means not secular. And yet, you can't just have a definitional circle here. They define each other, and yet they're paradoxically trying to exist separate from one another. But the truth is that the boundaries between what is secular and what is religious aren't often as hard and fast as we think. And this is particularly evident in atheist churches. So my friend and colleague Joseph Blankholm has written a book called The Secular Paradox. The Secular Paradox. And I'm going to quote him at full here because he spent time interviewing and spending life with and living day to day with atheists and non-believers and non-religious and agnostic and ap-atheist people in California. And he wrote that very secular people, these non-religious folks, who are very avowed in not believing and not being religious, are ambivalent toward belief, which says they don't really have strong feelings one way or the other about it. They're ambivalent about community and ritual and conversion and tradition. They have hard questions about it. They like to distance themselves from it. And yet, he says, as they try to embrace what they share, secular people encounter it again and again that they are becoming, in their own feelings, too religious. And as they reject religion, they feel they've actually lost too much in the process. And so, trying to strike the right balance, secular people alternate between the two sides of their ambiguous condition, either being absolutely not religious or part of a religion-like secular tradition. And this is really encapsulated in a movement that's known as atheist churches. Has anybody ever ran into this phenomenon? Never heard of it? It was like all the rage about 10 years ago. But I got to know a guy named Mike Aus. Okay? You'll notice that he's the first person that I've given the full name, and it's actually his real name. There's a whole public story here. You could Google Mike Aus later. But Mike was a Lutheran pastor. And he quite famously came out of the atheist closet, you might say, at the National Atheist Convention in Washington, D.C., where they had a million non-believers gathering in D.C. to talk about atheist recognition and all the problems they saw with U.S. government and Constitution being too Christian. And Mike went up on stage and announced to the world, his family did not know, his church did not know, his friends did not know that he was going to do this. But on live TV, on CNN, he announced he no longer believed and he was leaving the church. Imagine if you were his congregation and your pastor is on CNN and he comes out and says, yep, don't believe in God. I mean, the next Sunday was awkward, wasn't it? You know? But Mike announced on national TV that he was no longer going to believe her. He announced at the exact same time that he was going to start a new church, an atheist church in Houston, Texas, called Oasis. And I spent a lot of time at Oasis. So I went down to Mike's Oasis church in downtown Houston several times. I interviewed a lot of people who were there. I wrote stories about Mike for the Houston Chronicle. And I spent a lot of time with Mike as well. Mike and I would grab coffee. He was constantly trying to convince me to stop being a Lutheran pastor and become an atheist pastor. It was like recruitment for the anti-seminary, okay? He was not giving out fanny packs, though, like the seminary is here. Maybe that's why I didn't switch over. I'm not sure. But Mike was trying to recruit me and tell me about the values of an Oasis church. And they did church. Instead of singing worship songs, they sang Bob Dylan. Okay, instead of reading the Bible, they read portions of philosophy, or they read poetry, or they read like classic atheist thinkers from time past. They did church. They even had donuts and coffee. They had all the trappings. And Mike said, he says, I get it. Church is important. It's community, and it's connection, and it's relationships, and it's activity, and it's something to do on Sunday morning and get free donuts. And I want to provide that for people who don't believe, who have left their religion. And Mike and Oasis are far from alone. There's also people like Jerry DeWitt here down on the bottom who talk about rejecting the belief but retaining the structure to create what they call hyper-real religions. Religions that are a copy or a facsimile or an imitation of the real thing but existing in an alternate space. Now, I get why people do these things, right? But unfortunately, as Jerry DeWitt, the guy here on the bottom, said, the trap is that after non-belief, ex-pastors, ex-evangelists for a different type of belief join the movement and they find a new platform for what they see as their new truth. And he said they substitute secular ideals, non-religious thoughts, around their charismatic personalities and practices. And often that can lead to problems, which we're going to talk about in a moment. So again, two things. There's wounds and wonder, and there's stories that we need to unearth from our atheist friends or the people that we come in contact who ask hard questions. The second thing, even though atheists will reject that they're religious, they're actually quite religious, and they're looking for community just like we all are. And the third thing, a priori assumptions. So yeah, an a priori assumption would be green is a color, right? Now, an a posteriori justification or conclusion would be grass is green. Do you see the difference? Green is a color. How do we test that? What is a color? Is it a creative color, as the philosopher in the front has asked? We can't prove whether or not green is a color, right? We just all kind of come to assume that, yeah, green is a color. The color green, Ken. Duh. But then when we look at grass is green, that's something where we can test, we can see. We throw it against the a priori assumption that green is a color and grass is the color green. Another a priori assumption is 2 + 2 = 4. 2 + 2 = 4, right? It actually equals fish. 2 + 2 = fish. Another a priori assumption, right? But an a posteriori justification or conclusion is 2 quarts of any liquid added to 2 more quarts of any liquid equals 4 quarts of liquid. I told you there was going to be a quiz, okay? You weren't ready for it, but I told you it was going to be a quiz. Now, those are a priori and a posteriori assumptions around the same topic. Another example would be Ken's pizza, okay? Ken's pizza is the best pizza in the world. It is true. I make a mean pizza, okay? I do my own dough. I don't make my own cheese, but I make everything else myself. I use vegetables from my garden. Mwah, okay? Beautiful. But you might say, well, that's an a priori assumption, Ken. But the a posteriori justification or conclusion would be Ken's pizza tastes better than other pizzas I've tasted. So enough of the examples. Now let's get into belief and non-belief. So someone who believes is going to make the a priori assumption that nature... Ooh, I switched these around. Okay. But belief, the person who believes is going to say nature is not all there is. Okay? Right? Would we agree with this? There is something beyond nature. What would we call that? It starts with an S, ends with an uppernatural. Supernatural. Well done. Well done, team. Fantastic. Okay. So, we believe in the supernatural, that nature is not all there is, that God is beyond nature, that there are spiritual things, that the Spirit is at work in this world, that God is present in water and in bread and in wine. We believe some crazy stuff, okay? But then non-believers would say, nature is all there is. There is nothing beyond nature. Both of these are a priori assumptions. Both of these cannot be tested. You cannot test whether or not God exists beyond nature, because what do you have to test it? Just nature, right? But then you go over to your atheist friend and they say, nature is all there is, and then say to them, prove it. And they'd say, well, nature is all there is. That's it. But how can you test whether nature is all there is if you have nothing beyond nature in order to test it? I wish I had known this stuff when I had that conversation with Mario. That's why I'm sharing with you philosophy at 12:35 in the afternoon. Because if anybody who doesn't believe ever makes you feel like you're philosophically inferior or you just don't understand your belief, you say, well, my friend, let me talk to you about a priori and a posteriori assumptions and conclusions. And you'll probably win the debate right there. But at least you can say to them, we're starting on the same ground. I believe nature is not all there is. You believe nature is all there is. Let's start a conversation about why we believe that. Let's not worry about the philosophical assumptions because we start from the same place. Let's have a conversation. Let's learn more from each other and the questions that we both have and the assumptions that we both share and the values that we might be looking for and the community that we both so desperately want and need. Because as we would say, we have all been created in the image of God to be in relationship with Him and in relationship with one another. So, again, not all nuns are on the same journey. They have not all come from the same place. It's important to ask and seek to understand their story, which leads us to some postures and some practices to adopt when dealing with non-belief and non-believers that I want to leave you with today. The first of our postures and practices of dealing with people who are non-believers or with the non-belief that you're struggling with yourself is to listen. Listen to their story. Get to know the Jens and the Marios and the Gregs and the Mikes and the Jerrys and everyone else. And not just listen because, you know, you asked a question, but to listen with empathy and with humility and with curiosity. Difference should drive curiosity. It should invite questions, not shut down a conversation. And then to learn. I said that I love atheists, sometimes more than my fellow Christians. And that's because they ask hard questions, questions worth asking, questions we should be dealing with. So the opportunity to talk with someone who doesn't believe is an opportunity to explore questions you may not otherwise get the chance to. So lean into that conversation. Ask hard questions with them. Have tough conversations. Be sharpened in your faith, but then be sure to lean into community in two directions. One is with the community of Christians that you have around you. You have a gift, my friends. Look at the people to your left and to your right. The odds are that they are people that you know, that maybe you're sharing a hotel room with, and you'd rather not. It sounded like a good idea on Thursday, and here we are on Sunday. And that bathroom, am I right? But these people are your community. Warts, dirty bathrooms, farts and other smells and everything in between, okay? They're your people. Lean into that relationship. Because the only thing that has kept me where I am in my church today is because I have a community of people who are able to strengthen me, talk to me, comfort me, give me grace, and remind me of the gospel when I'm out there hanging with people who ask tough questions, who drive me into places that make me feel uncomfortable, whether they be atheists or Muslim, other types of Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, and the like. But then also don't lose sight of the fact that atheists are human beings just like you and me. They make assumptions, they're looking for community, they want to have connection. And if they're talking with you, it's because they like you. They love you. Don't ruin that. Don't be a jerk. Don't get so caught up in trying to convince them of the truth of Christianity that you lose a relationship. Don't be Greg's church. Don't be Jen's church. Love these people. Invite them into your life. Don't be creepy about it. Be friends. Lean into the relationships with the people around you in this room, but also into the relationships with people who don't believe. I shared with you a lot of stories today, and I wanna end with one more. I told you that I'm still friends with multiple atheists. Jen is still a good friend. Like I said, our best friends up in Sweden are avowed atheists. And Jen and I in particular, we continue to hang out, watch MST3K, go to live recordings. And one of the things that MST3K taught us and we love talking about is that mystery is the beginning of wonder. Mystery is the beginning of wonder. And if we've talked about and we've come to share the conviction that we both are assuming something. I've had this a priori, a posteriori conversation with Jen multiple times. And she accepts that she cannot test and verify that nature is all there is. And that I also cannot test and verify that nature is not all there is. And we find in that a deep mystery. And so we say mystery is the beginning of wonder. And then I like this quote from Abraham Joshua Heschel, that wonder, rather than doubt, is the root of all knowledge. God created Jen. God created Mario, Greg, you, and me. He created us for wonder. He gave us the opportunity to encounter mysteries. Lean into it. Ask the hard questions. Get to know people and build relationships. And love atheists, not in spite of being a Christian, but because you're a Christian. Now, you may have a lot more questions that you still are sitting with. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to convince you if you're having difficult questions about whether or not God exists in one 50-minute session to, like, pound it and be done. Because I think the questions and the conversations are very important. But if you have those questions, if you want to ask me about them, get in touch. This is me. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm not cool enough to be on other social media, but that's what I got. I'm an old man, okay? Reach out. My website's here. It's myname.com. Blech, that's disgusting, but that's how it is. If you're an adult leader and you want to have a conversation with me, you are wondering how you might be able to lead your students through this or your kids, reach out, ask some questions. I'm going to be hanging out here afterwards. Come up. But thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for being willing to address this question, to be able to lean into these relationships, and to share a bit of time with me. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks.